Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John gets mistaken for a convict and plagiarizes the Serenity Prayer. Meanwhile, I eat a gigantic potato and love tattoo culture, but don't want a tattoo. Plus, a conversation about the dangers of assembly line spirituality and how to trust God even when we don't get the outcome we hoped for. Today's episode is not sponsored by your 40s. Congratulations, your knees hurt now. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
On a blustery, near spring day, it's Talk About That. It's John and Johnny. Where we are, Johnny, the weather outside is frightful.
We're battening down the hatches.
Yeah.
What does it mean to batten down?
I think that means you're on a boat.
Yeah, but what's battening?
I'm sure it's like sealing it, maybe closing it.
There's no way.
Really tight? No, there's no way. We want you to batten down, listener. And
yeah, please. Yeah, here's the thing about Middle Tennessee that I was not ready for when I moved here. We get a lot of tornado warnings.
Yeah, we do now. It wasn't that way when I was a kid.
Oh, really?
No.
Do you think you just blocked it out, or you really think it's worse?
No, I think that there's like data that Tornado Alley, which used to be kind of Oklahoma.
Oh, it's shifted.
Has shifted this way a little
bit. The alley moved.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to move your alley.
It's true.
I don't know, man. It's
and then just like our lives.
I remember that a big tornado hit Austin Peay University in Clarksville.
Yes.
When Laura and I were like had first started dating.
Mm-hmm. We had a show there that was canceled.
Yeah.
Because they said the roof of the building that you were going to perform in is in the next county or something like that.
Yeah. Which normally,
I was like, all right, we'll cancel.
Whenever we play, we used to rip the roof off, if you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying?
This time,
it was literal. And
Mother Nature did it.
We had nothing to do with it. So.
Are you one of those people that gets offended spiritually when somebody says Mother Nature? When they refer to like a weather event?
I don't ever use that expression.
I think I say Mother Nature sometimes because I don't want to like just blame God when something horrible weather happens.
So you just blame a mythical...
Because you can't say like, well, God blew the roof off that... Like, because I don't know how weather works in the spirit realm. We're getting heavy already. We're getting deep.
I know that scripturally that there is another who is called the Prince of the Power of the Air.
Okay.
So sometimes it's like, I think that one of the greatest mysteries of theology, Johnny, is the all-powerful granting that power unto us for a season and then whom we've granted it to. While he still redeems all things, there's still a lot of things that he has chosen not to be in charge of out of respect for our choices. And I think a lot of the brokenness of the world, including the brokenness of nature, is a result of that. And it's very unpredictable. And I do think God intervenes a lot. And I think that when we're mad at him, when he doesn't intervene, and it's a hard thing to know. But that's just in a nutshell, Johnny. In a nutshell. Yeah, super light.
But it's okay with you if I say Mother Nature then.
I think it's a common expression that,
that heretics.
I could not.
Is that what you want
to? You don't listen.
It's very common for someone who is, say, spiritually bankrupt
right.
to say.
Someone whose conscience has been seared with a hot iron. Sure, go for it. But
gosh,
that's what I would expect. So
I don't know.
Yeah.
But yes, it's blustery, and I was not prepared for that when I moved to Middle Tennessee. I was not ready for all the random sirens. I will say this. How does your dog handle the storms? How does Ace do?
He usually gets on his app and kind of just checks and sees the warnings.
Right. So. He gets the notifications.
He doesn't seem that. He's not like Brutus. He's
aloof.
Freaked out all the time.
Usually if you have two dogs, one is an aloof and one is. It's like a marriage.
Yeah.
You have one aloof partner and one that freaks out about everything and you balance each other out.
Which are you?
I think I'm a worrier.
You're the one that freaks out.
Yeah.
So you're calling your wife aloof.
Well, she's more aloof than me. She's aloof compared to me. Yeah. She would say that she's normal and I'm freaking out. And I would say that I'm the right level of worry.
Right. Just the
and
right
she's
level.
Aloof. Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, well, you talked about this because you went to the hearing doctor. And I feel like in every marriage, there's a partner who mumbles and also thinks that their partner has hearing problems.
Correct. I told her that the day. I was like, whenever you don't hear me, it's because I mumbled.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I don't hear you, it's because I have hearing problems.
You just don't listen.
Right. It's yeah. like, it can't both be true, surely, all the time. Not only do I mumble, I also have hearing problems. No.
You thread the needle of being wrong in both instances.
Correct. Like, yeah.
How did you do it? But anyway, yeah, I'm a worrier. Like, we've talked about that before, that I'm kind of the... I'm the woman in our relationship as far as like emotionally. I'm the one who would have the conversation of like, I feel like we're not connecting. And she'd be like, oh my God, I can feel her losing patience. You know, I think we need to talk about this. And she'd be like, oh no,
we don't need to talk about
it. Let's just go to dinner. Yeah. What are we doing?
Well, again, I'd like to just once again state I'm offended by your gross stereotypes.
I'm saying we break the stereotypes,
but
I'm being vulnerable here and saying that I'm a total beta.
Well, it could just be, maybe
it's a spectrum.
Maybe it's not based upon.
Maybe it's not cut and dry like we think it is, John.
I think we've stereotyped women and men because, you know, I'm a sensitive guy.
I don't care what type of stereo you have, as long as we share beliefs and you're not different than me at all. That joke won't work soon because people don't have stereos.
Right. They're like, what is that?
What is a stereo?
Hey, it's like one of the few jokes I've ever written about mono. It just doesn't. It's one of those things you say where it hits a very small audience of people.
If two people get mono, her mono was so bad, she had stereo.
Yeah, I think it was. I got mono.
Have you ever had mono?
Oh, yeah. I said, I got mono twice. I think I had stereo.
When did you get mono?
High school. Junior year.
So
I
had mono in sixth grade.
Mm.
And you know, it's called the kissing disease.
Right. And you're like, I haven't.
Right. I hadn't kissed a girl yet. And so it was like more embarrassing to have it and be teased.
Well, you should have played into it. Like
I should have leaned into
it. Dang straight, I have the kissing disease.
I wasn't.
Could be next or whatever. It's.
You won't have any idea how swollen my spleen is. Isn't that part of mono? It's like your spleen's very tender. Like I think I read somewhere. Because this is before you could even like just Google your symptoms and freak out about it. This is pre-WebMD, way pre. But somehow I found out that like part of what mono is, your spleen is so inflamed that if you took like a shot to the solar plexus, you could die. Like your spleen could just explode. So it's like you have to be careful with your spleen during that mono time.
I'm generally careful with my spleen.
I think I missed like 3 weeks of school.
I missed a couple.
Yeah.
I had my junior prom. With mono.
You're saying you baby your spleen a little bit?
It's my favorite organ.
Is it? Do you even know what a spleen does?
No. But
do we need a spleen?
Isn't it like a filter of
can
some
you
sort?
Get a... I think that's... You're thinking of kidneys.
See, if you have a...
What
no,
is
no, no, I don't need my... No, I know what my kidneys do.
I'm looking it up.
No, I don't want to...
You don't want to know?
I think a spleen is like... I think it's like a place where immunity and stuff like that is affected. Oh, my wife is dying right now.
Siri, what does a spleen do? Your spleen is involved in your body's immune response and in recycling old blood cells.
I just said that, except the blood cell part.
You said it was a filter.
I said, yeah, it's immunity. I literally said the word immunity. Now I have immunity from this conversation.
From my criticism.
Yeah. So
a lot of people think they don't need their spleen. If you're against recycling, you're like, I don't need this thing recycling for me.
You should see my pictures of my junior prom. I went anyway. My throat was all swollen.
Oh,
like,
no.
I am like pale.
You got it definitely from kissing, right? You were making out
Johnny,
with...
Johnny, let's...
You were a little bit of a himbo.
We're not going to lean into those things.
You were a player, man.
No, I wasn't a player. I mean, I had a few...
You had the little swoopy hairdo. Swoop. You had the swoop at the end.
I did have hair.
Yeah.
Which, imagine... Just imagine.
So powerful, then. What happened to you?
Yes, it's...
Your spleen stopped working.
That's
probably what's going on.
I bet I need like a spleen supplement.
A splenectomy. That's a real thing.
Spleptomy. That was hard to say.
But yeah, that's probably what happened. Your old blood cells weren't getting recycled properly because you rushed back. You didn't take the necessary time off. You rushed back to have this... important date in your life, And now your spleen's like, you know what? I'm not making any more hair. Because I think that's what spleens do now. I've decided.
That's great. Yeah. My spleen's like, you know what? You don't take care of me, I'm not taking care of you.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great if your body parts really could like speak to you in that way?
Well, there is something like my hair's turning gray, and I wonder like how that works. Like you get to a certain age, your body's like, you know what? No more color.
Yeah.
Like you just stop sending color.
Like you wasted this all these years.
Evidently. I want everybody to know how old you are.
That's great. We could do something with that. This is a bit. Now you go make it more funny.
I don't know.
And write a few tags to it.
I'll work on it. We got a package this week from a loyal listener.
Oh wow.
Larry Marshall, our friend at
Larry'sLamps.com.
Well, he's not Larry's Lamps. Hold on. It's Foothills Collectibles.
Oh, it's way better than Larry's Lamps. Sorry, Larry.
If you go to Etsy and look up Foothills Collectibles, I believe is what it is.
He does make the coolest things, man.
So he sent us this letter, and I read.
Well, people
this is like letters. Casey. It's like Casey Kasem.
Yeah.
And he writes, there's a letter. Gents, just a little something to say thanks for the podcast. I have a weird mix of podcast interests, but always enjoy you guys and learn a little something along the way. I often listen while doing workshop stuff, and the laser is just my new hobby I'm experiencing with. So, John, he used a laser to make this.
Wow.
I thought it was going to be a lamp, because he asked for our logo.
Yeah.
On a GIF of it or whatever. Not a GIF. JPEG. He goes, send me your logo in a good resolution.
Like PNG.
And I thought he was going to like put a sticker around a lamp and send us a new lamp. No, he made this with a laser. I thought I'd make you a couple of experimental coasters. Nothing fancy, but I think they work pretty much like a coaster. If for some reason you might like more, I know a guy. Best of luck to the Vols during March. That's not easy for him to say. He's a big Blue Nation guy. Ew. He's a Kentucky fan, like, all the way. Wow. I have pretty low expectations for my Wildcats, but I will be cheering for the SEC regardless. One of these days, I'd love to join you both at Longhorn and chew the fat.
Nice.
So that's a date, Larry. You got to do that.
Absolutely.
For real.
All right, let me
so
see.
So Larry has, with a laser, let's see if I can get these on camera too. He made us talk about that.
Wow.
Coasters.
It's amazing.
And they're etched out. Pretty cool. Little back has little rubber grippies on them. And he made us a couple of those and then a couple of stone ones.
Oh.
Check these out.
Wow.
So I'll give a couple of these to you to take home, and I'll take a couple. I thought I might hang one on the wall because it's so cool.
Yeah.
Like, put it up there.
Hey, big thanks to Larry. That's awesome. And you guys should check out his...
Foothills Collectibles.
Foothills Collectibles.
He makes so many cool things. He has, like, amazing little repurposed lamps, cigar box lamps. And then now he does this, evidently, which I didn't know. And he does yarn work, too, kind of like what this is behind me, my JW logo.
Yeah.
This wasn't made by him, but he does these. Like, he has one that's in the shape of states.
Nice.
And it'll say, like, yeah, home. It has a little heart in the middle. He does those. I think he's just, he's a hobbyist.
Pretty talented guy.
I think it's good, because, you know, Larry's in ministry, so I think sometimes people do that kind of stuff. It, like, it's your shut off your brain kind of time.
Yeah.
Because you're just, there's so much going on. You know this. You counsel with people.
Yeah.
And you go, I need a break. Give me some yarn.
I do feel
and
that
a
way.
Laser.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, listener? Maybe you need a little break just for a moment to hear just a short little announcement from a few of our sponsors. It's really cool that I do think that what you do with your hands, if you can find something to do. Like,
yeah.
I actually cleaned out my garage in January, and it was very therapeutic.
Yeah. Well, it's like a checklist. You can check it off.
Yeah.
And you feel like something's like handing someone else stuff that you're not using anymore, be it the trash man or you donate a big bin of stuff. Like, it just feels like it's, you can just not think about it anymore.
Well, yeah, you're
cleansing,
uncluttering not just your space, but your mind, your life. And you're also making, like I said, definitive decisions. That's a big thing for me. Ooh,
yeah.
I made a decision, got something done.
Well, that was that original Marie Kondo thing that went viral, the big trend. She had her show on Netflix, Tidying Up.
Mm.
And she would talk about like how everything that doesn't spark joy, you hold, like the average home has 400,000 items in it.
Wow.
And she would say, you need to go through your house and look at each of these items, and they need to go into four, I think it's four bins. One of them is keep, one of them is sell, One of them is donate, and one of them is store. So you need to make a decision. One of these four piles, every 400,000 item goes in one of these piles. And so people don't do that, but that's how you tidy up. My favorite part about that is, though, Marie Kondo, there's just an article about her. She's back in the news because now she's had three kids. And she was like, I don't tidy up anymore. my house is in shambles.
There's nothing you can do.
She just goes, oh, this was something that like people without kids do.
Yep.
And they think that they're saving the world. It's kind of like the secular version of I Kiss Dating Goodbye.
Right.
Like once you put it in the real world, like metrics, you go, yeah. Oh, this is just pie in the sky. I should only date the person I'm going to marry.
Right.
When you put it in the real world, you're like, oh, this is,
yeah,
this is crazy. And it's not that easy.
No. And well, number one, I admire her for coming out and saying that.
That's
pretty great.
Yeah.
Mostly
she's got like weird, like sippy cups with like old milk in them that smell just in her sink. And yeah. The idea of that sparks joy in me. that's happening for her.
I think that the Christian world in particular, but I think it's human as well, but we're so inclined to make a rule that we think everyone can follow. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? We want to be like, oh, I've identified now the way that this thing should work for everyone.
Yeah.
I have a whole theory about, I want to write a book someday called Blame Henry Floyd. Henry Floyd. Oh, Henry Floyd.
Oh, man, that guy.
Henry Ford. Because I do believe that there's something about the generations trickling down from the Industrial Revolution that we don't understand sort of the impact of the assembly line on our thinking. It's assembly line thinking.
Right.
That there's it's more to it than just, oh, you know.
Or a one-size-fits-all solution.
Well, like the thing you just got from Larry, that's a craftsman, and that's how everything was made.
Yeah.
At one point. Someone made something. Mm-hmm. And you might have them make it the same way, but it's still made by hand. You know, it, like soldiers' uniforms during the Civil War were often different, you know, even though it's called a uniform, which you'd think all be the same. They had to have, you know, it wouldn't be uncommon, especially for the Confederacy, for it to be elements of that uniform that were custom to reflect your family,
I didn't know that.
Your mom.
That's interesting.
You know, she'd make your uniform, you know, and it would have these, you know, custom sort of elements to
it. What do
it.
You think your uniform would have had to honor your mom?
Well, I don't. That's a great question.
Like I
don't know what mom would have put.
I think it would be a little patch of a baked potato. Your mom always made potatoes.
Mom makes a good baked potato.
Well, I would go to your house on a trip. We'd have a show. We're gonna have dinner at my house. I'd be like, all right, cool. And then it would be these gigantic baked potatoes,
huge.
And I'd be like, okay, so what are we? Is it steak? Or is your dad grilling steak? No. It's potato bar. I go. I didn't grow up like this. What are we doing with the potatoes? No, you eat the potatoes, and then you're full, and you shut your mouth. they were good potatoes. Sometimes there was
bacon.
She'd put chili in them sometimes.
Yeah, chili, bacon, all kinds of stuff on it. Yeah.
But it was just funny to me. Like, I always thought a potato was a side.
You hadn't had.
She was like, you haven't had these potatoes, and they were big as your head.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
and
it was
you would
like,
be full. There's no way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Because it was like eating a head.
Well, it's like in the South, they have cat head biscuits.
Right.
And you go, well, what does that mean? Well, what does it sound like it means? We have biscuits as big as a cat's head.
Or it could sound worse than that.
Yeah.
Like we've made a biscuit.
We've made a biscuit out of
a
cat head.
Out of a cat head. Now eat it and shut
Good
your
luck.
Mouth.
But I'm allergic. Eat your biscuit.
I'm allergic. That's the thing you're most worried about.
Yeah.
You know, interestingly enough,
yeah.
About the South. Mm-hmm. So you've made fun of me when I was a kid. I don't think I brought this
John,
up.
John, I never stopped making fun of you since we met.
That's true.
Okay. Well,
but there was something in particular you made fun of me about that I've carried for 25 years
Oh,
now.
No. And it's going to come out now?
And now, whew, I think I'm vindicated.
Oh.
And it
only took a quarter century.
And you're going to be shamed. So the thing that comes out of the side of your house and the outside that water flows through.
Right.
You call.
A spigot.
What's the thing connected to it?
A hose pipe.
You don't call it a hose pipe.
No, I think I call it a... It's actually, the technical name of it is a frost-proof silcock. That's what it's called, because I used to sell them at Home Depot.
Okay.
That's the thing that goes back into the wall, and it keeps the water supply back out of harm's way.
Yeah, I'm talking about the hose.
Yeah.
The thing you're screwing in.
A hose. Yeah.
So you always, I'd go get the hose pipe. You go, get the what?
Yeah, hose pipe.
And I'd be like.
I think I call it a hose pipe to make fun of you because you always call it a hose pipe.
We call it a hose pipe. So I've been having this conversation with lots of Nashvillians.
Well, it's actually, it's a non-rigid piece of pipe. It's a hose pipe. So I get why.
But everyone, like lots of people are like, hose pipe, what's
that? It sounds very 1950s, though. It sounds like something that Ward Cleaver would have said to June Cleaver.
Right. You said, it's just a hose. It's just a garden hose. It's just a whatever. Yeah. I was like, okay. So I sat on that. I stopped calling it hose pipe.
Right.
For but all
are
these
you saying
years.
It's coming back? Like people are saying hose pipe now?
I was watching.
You were let me guess. You were at the Soda Jerk. And right before you went into the Five and Dime, some rabble rousers were talking about the hose pipe.
You pick up this Dr. Pepper, you'd be a soda jerk. I was watching PBS Masterpiece Theater show, and it was a 1930s.
Yeah, thank you.
In England.
Yeah.
And they said hose pipe.
Right.
In England in 1930s.
In the 1930s.
And so I went.
John, what decade is it now?
I went.
Real quick.
And did some etymological research.
Okay. So studied some bugs.
And hose pipe is a British word. So somehow in the Nashville, it's the only people I know, because I talked to all the staff who are Nashvillians.
All right. Like the all the big language centers. Britain, Nashville.
And everyone, like some of my Hendersonville staff friends are like, oh yeah, we say hose pipe. But right. Like people who are not from here, they're like, no, we don't say hose pipe. Like somehow, and I don't know how, somehow that British thing trickled down into this geographical region.
Well, your dad was an educator, so maybe he just...
And he spoke English.
That was his hoity-toity way of talking about the hose.
There was nothing hoity-toity about anything. Like, it just somehow trickled
in. Drinking from a hose is very... Like, that water's... The first burst of it's kind of warm because it's been sitting
That's
in the...
because it's cleaning out the hose pipe first. There's water in the hose pipe that has to clean.
You got
to
rinse that out.
You wait. No, don't do that.
Well, I was really thirsty.
Have you used a hose pipe to ever siphon out a gas tank before?
Yeah, once. Yeah.
I had to do it the other day.
Oh, really?
Not for a gas tank, for my water softener.
Okay.
That got all full of all this.
So
nasty.
You weren't inhaling?
No, it was salt water.
Did you
water,
get any
it was
in your?
Nasty. Yeah, I got a little bit.
It's not great.
I got a little bit. My dad used to get mouthfuls of gasoline.
There's something they did during the big fuel shortages of the 70s and 80s that cars now you can't siphon. There's like a one way lid, because I remember reading that, because I was like, I was unable to siphon from a car one time when I broke down.
Yeah.
And somebody said, well, just siphon from, and I was like, okay. And there was like a blockage, and they said, yeah, they've stopped. But, and it was because of the gas war in 70s and 80s.
And see, guys, isn't that just like our lives?
Yeah.
I mean, some of y'all, you put something into the tank.
Some of y'all still living off something God did for you in the 70s.
Or you're hoping to go get something out of someone else's tank instead of putting it in your own tank.
You can't do that.
You can't siphon someone else's fuel.
God doesn't make you that way anymore. Wait.
God now has put a little thing in the tank. Wait.
It's a, anti-siphon device.
Hose pipe no longer, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's the thing. But yeah, you know, you hear a lot of stories from your father and grandfather about siphoning gas and getting a mouthful of gas. Like every family has guy.
Yeah.
I've seen that. And it's not, you burp gas for a long time, evidently. Burping gas is not.
I don't think your dad swallowed, but I remember thinking as a kid, this is bad. Like, this is bad for dad's health. Johnny, this is no good.
But dad's not a machine. He is in trouble. If he was an internal combustion engine, we'd be fine. If only.
Hey, I got an interesting story I haven't told you.
Oh.
So.
All these years?
You've waited till now to tell your first interesting story.
No, you're fine.
So the other day, it was cold, and I was taking a run.
Oh, and nice. You're back in it, man.
It was getting, I knew it might be dark or close to dusky. People coming home from work on that road, I knew, like, okay. So I had, like, I got this thing that goes around the heel of your shoe that's like an orange light, and it can blink. A
hose pipe.
It's a hose pipe. And it lights up. So I have this.
So you have light up shoes, like little kids?
Yeah.
Every time you take a step?
No, it stays on, or you can set it to blink or whatever. But it's like behind, it's like brake lights. You're putting brake lights on your shoes.
Yeah.
And I have a heated vest now.
Look at you. Is it a little battery pack?
Yeah. And it's not like hot, but when the rest of you is cold, it keeps you warm. Like it really was, kept me very warm.
All right.
And so of course I got the mask on. I mean, it's cold. It was like in the 20s that day.
Yeah.
I go out, I do my run. And I usually like run 3 miles and walk back to and kind of have my time around. There's a beautiful kind of park and lake and stuff there, and I'll go walk there and pray and all this stuff. And so I'm walking back, and I walk by this house that I walk past all the time, and there's a dog in the yard. He's a bigger black dog, or she. I think it was a she. Bigger black dog. And there's a fence there, but not a fence that would hold her back. It was just like a wooden...
Like a picket fence.
Yeah. She could get through if she wanted. So dogs sometimes, as you know, when you run, it's not good.
Right.
You know,
they
so,
sense that there's something. They sense fear.
Right. You're near
there. Because
their...
what you're feeling was fear.
Well, I'm trying to be afraid, so I talk to the dogs. So this one backfired. So if a dog's barking, I'm like, hey, it's okay, buddy. No, you're good. Go home now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll just kind of be gentle. So I start talking to the dog, you know, like,
yeah.
All right, that's a good boy. You know, I was doing something like that.
You
so
assumed
I'm in the
its gender. You said it was a girl dog.
And, she was infuriated.
Yeah.
So I talked too nice to that dog.
Oh, no.
She starts jumping around making this yip, yip, like playing noise. Like she wants to play.
Right.
I'm like, but that backfired. So I get about a quarter of a mile down the road.
You adopted this dog.
And we got her right here. Bring her in, guys. I get about a quarter mile down the road, and all of a sudden, she has left her yard and run down to me.
You got a running partner.
And I got this. Well, I'm still walking at this point.
Oh.
So now I got to walk her all the way back home.
Right.
So, I mean, she's playing in the mud. I'm like, no, don't play in the mud. And she'll listen to me. She'll sit. I mean, the whole deal. We're, you know, I pet
her a
little
bit. John, you
made
a buddy.
I take her all the way back home.
Yeah.
She will not go in her yard.
Oh, no.
Won't go in her driveway. Won't do it. So now I'm like, well, I don't want to leave this dog out here because we're out here near Corps of Engineers property. Like, it's pretty vast. There's a lot of wildlife, you know. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
I don't want to just leave her. And they don't, you know, it doesn't look like anyone's home. Then I see someone kind of move in the window upstairs, like, well, someone's home. So I walk up. Hit the little ring doorbell.
Yeah.
Nobody comes.
Oh, boy.
I hit it again. No one comes. At this point, the dogs run off.
Oh,
can't
no.
Can't find the dog.
Oh, no.
Hit the doorbell. Walk down the driveway. I see the curtains moving. I was like, someone's inside.
Yeah.
But
they just think that you're a...
Me.
Yeah, right. Well, nobody answers the door anymore.
And I got the mask off at this point, but...
Yeah.
So,
but you got the light-up shoes. That's terrifying.
So I called a neighbor I know...
Yeah.
...who knows everyone. And I was like, hey... Do you got the number for this house? He's like, oh, yeah. So he sends it to me. I call the number. The guy answers, hey, were you just at my door? I was like, yeah. He goes, look, I'm out of town, but I could see you in the ring doorbell thing, and I was trying to talk
but
to you.
But who was in the curtain?
But it was trying to Bluetooth to the other room, so I couldn't figure out why you couldn't hear me. It's because it was Bluetooth. It was all messed up.
But what was the curtain moving for?
So he said, well, my kids are home.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, they're teenagers, and they were on the other side of the door with a gun, just by the way. I kind of thought, like, you know, don't stand here doing this all day. Get out of here in case you're scaring somebody. Just, you know, I was like, well, that's okay.
The middle of the day. They're going to pull out a gun?
You want to know what they thought?
What?
They thought that I was escaped from prison and that my little thing on my foot was like a prison ankle bracelet, like lit up.
So they drew down.
They thought that I was just some guy in a black vest walking up with, you know,
right.
And they could see the glowing ember of my ankle or whatever. And then the dad was like, but I saw you on the camera. I was like, guys, that's just some dude trying not to get run over by a car. So like we kind of, but I look like a prison escapee.
Yeah.
And
it's good to know.
Trying
now
to return
you know.
A dog.
Now, yeah. You know, like Hollywood has a thing where like it's better to have like a certain look than to be George Clooney.
Yeah.
Because you can always work.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's better to be George Clooney if you can be George Clooney. Always. But
I'm
saying,
so.
Not everybody can be George Clooney. But it's almost as good to have just like a look. There's like character actors.
Yeah. So I could be the prison guy.
Yeah.
You know, no one's ever accused me of that before.
Yeah.
But.
You look like you've got a past.
Really?
You know? Like you don't have tats or anything, but there's tats on your personality.
You know? I need some tats.
I watch Ink Master a lot now.
Okay.
We've gone back, like we kind of go binge old shows.
Yeah.
And there's a million seasons of it. And so now we're watching it again and I really enjoy subcultures of things.
Yeah.
And like a deep dive into a subculture of that you don't know anything about. And
Right. Tattooing
is one of those things. I grew up thinking like tattoos were not good or what, not like sin, but just like, oh, tattooed people or whatever. And so I just stayed away from that. But now I know so much about it, and I have so many friends who have tattoos. And I just think it's so interesting, the whole, like, there's a million styles, and some people are really good at one style versus another.
Yeah.
I think, but it doesn't, here's what's funny about that. It does not make me want to get a tattoo more. Like, knowing, even seeing beautiful tattoos in this competition that they're on, I don't go, ooh, I would get that one. I just go, that's really cool. And then I just move on with my pale skin.
This may be because I think you're a six, but as a six, like the decision, the pre-decision.
Yeah. The inner committee.
Yes. To commit to something that I think I will still want there for the rest of my life.
Right.
Because I go, well, I don't know what my future self will think. I way overthink it.
Would you get something like Laura's name? Because, I mean, you've committed to her for 20 something years, right? So you feel
absolutely.
Pretty good about that. So that would be something you'll do that.
Well,
like Johnny Depp had Winona Forever tattooed famously on him. And then they broke up like a year later. And my favorite part about that story is he had the N and the A removed from the tattoo only. So it literally says Wino forever now on his arm. I think that's true. I read that in more than one place.
That's funny.
So Johnny Depp has a Wino forever.
Well, I've always told Sadie, I was like, hey, if you decide when you turn, when you become of age, you want a tattoo.
And she was like, well, in Pioneer days, I would be of age. So I already did it.
And in Pioneer days, the tattoo parlors were aplenty.
maybe they were. You don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Go out of the whole spot and rinse it off.
The history of tattoos.
I was like, hey, we can go get one together.
Oh, look at that.
We'll pick something out together.
Yeah.
And, you know.
But are you going to agree on something that an 18-year-old girl would want?
We'll have to agree on it.
Yeah.
But especially something that ties us together.
Oh, that's nice.
I think that'd be great.
Like half the heart and then she has the other half. And it's like.
I might be a little less. I'm thinking like.
Nothing that corny.
I don't know.
If you've got half heart tattoos, guys, we apologize.
Yeah.
John thinks it's real corny.
No, I don't think it's corny. It's fun. I don't know. That's the thing. I think it'd be cool for us to deliberate on that.
I can't think of anything. Like, that's part of it. Like you said, the inner committee. What do I really like? A lot of things. I love the Lakers. I've been a Laker fan since I was a kid.
But do you want a tattoo?
Do I want Magic Johnson on my arm?
Right.
No.
I can
maybe a Lakers logo, but where would you put it? And then, like, then they're going to do something stupid as an organization.
Right.
Like, it's not just a matter of, like, the Lakers are losing, because they're losing right now. But they're a historically great organization.
Right.
17 championships or whatever. But it's like, yeah, do you want to be affiliated with that sports team forever?
And, like, the idea of putting a scripture or something, which that sounds more like me, probably, what I would have thought.
Yeah.
And then I go, is it a – I did – like last night, I had a or two nights ago, there was a waitress who had part of the Serenity Prayer, on her arm. I was like,
just the ands and the V's though. That's
right.
The only, that's
like,
a weird.
I pieced together a lot.
It's a strange tattoo.
Quite a bit to get to
just the consonants.
But I was like,
why would you only put part? Like,
no,
well,
it was the cool, like, the because the Serenity Prayer is a little long, John.
Oh, is it? Oh, I the only think of it. But it was God grant me the serenity to change the things.
Right. Out. It was like. Change the things I can.
Accept the things I cannot change.
I think that's what it was. Just those two lines.
Wisdom to know the difference.
But they were like, I don't think she had the wisdom line.
Okay.
Because there had been three lines on her arm. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
It was condensed, probably.
Yeah, it was.
To fit on her arm and also because it
Serenity
was.
Serenity abridged.
That's right. You remember the time I wrote the Serenity Prayer?
Oh, in your.
Do you remember this? I had.
You were preaching.
No, it was back when social media was first a thing, and I had been praying and studying.
Oh,
and I came to like this big spiritual moment.
Yeah.
Big spiritual moment, and I was writing all this stuff, and I wrote basically a parallel. Because I'd never, like, Serenity Prayer is a recovery thing. I didn't really study that till years later. And so I wrote like this whole thing about. I basically wrote the Serenity Prayer in my own words.
I think I'm the one that texted you.
You and my wife both. Yeah.
I go, hey, John, congrats.
You just
discovered the Serenity Prayer. What's funny is, we didn't grow up around the Serenity Prayer because it felt too Catholic-y for us, probably, right?
Right.
And we were just like,
oh, well, it's not just Catholic-y. It's that it's not very Arminian either.
Yeah.
Friendly to the way we were raised.
Right.
Arminians who would believe that it's all up to you. Again, I'm sorry, Arminians. We would light in Arminian in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So we were certainly raised that way. I don't mean to oversell it. Like, if I meet a Calvinist or meet an Arminian, they're usually not the caricature or the trope that everyone assumes. They're usually reasonable, and they don't. Of course, I think God's in charge, and of course, I think you have choice. Both sides would say that.
Yeah. Just where they light on the spectrum.
Right. But the idea of God grant me the ability to know things that I don't have control over.
Yeah.
That would have been
a tough one.
A tough one for a lot of people we grew up with, because it's like, well, you just need to have more faith or pray your way out of this or read the Bible more or fast or like there's always something that you can control. And I think that's where, the first step of recovery is like this admittance that I am powerless over a lot of things.
Yeah, it's the Ink Master thing. It's subcultures are so powerful. And they're not all bad. There's a million things about Christian subculture that I think are good and positive. And I know we talk a lot about like the bad sometimes, or we talk about like, we almost like, because we're talking about what's interesting to us. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting kind of pouring through the rubble of you know, just the, if you're going through a bookshelf of things and your past, it's almost like cleaning out the garage. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, I remember that. And sometimes you look at it and go, I can't believe it's like an old photo.
Yeah.
You're looking at this old photo of this thing that you used to really like.
That, right.
Or you would fight for it. Not even a matter of like, do I still believe it? But would I get in a fight over it now?
Right.
Whereas we fought about everything. Like everything was this battle, a hill to die on.
Yeah.
When you're a kid and you go, these are the beliefs that are instilled in me. And so there's things I still hold to. I have core values, but everything's not a hill to die on. And so when you look at those old, like in your mind, a photo of something, it's like you're pulling it out going, all right, yeah, man, this used to be a real thing for me. So, but yeah, subcultures are fascinating that way. And you're right though, that almost the illusion of control that we imagine someone, like you never would want to say that. Like, let me make this better. You can't possibly make it better.
Right.
Like, it's offensive to say it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I think there's a balance. You know, I do come into a place where, I mean, there's something I was praying about this morning, like really, really petitioning God for.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a weird time, and I'm apologize because I'm having trouble remembering it. It may have been my therapist friend who told me, or I can't remember if I read it somewhere, but he was talking about how everyone throughout all of Scripture, every person of faith, generally what was miraculous that happened usually happened earlier mm-hmm. in their story, and often it was to save them from death or to also bring them into the faith.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there's this big miraculous thing that God does for them or multiple series of things. And by that, it establishes their belief and their trust in God.
Yeah.
If they continue down a path of faith, then almost every one of them comes into a season that, again, the poets have called the dark night of the soul.
Yeah.
There is a season where, and specifically it's marked by what used to work in your early days of faith no longer works.
Yeah.
And now what he was saying is, and whoever the author was, that your faith is not measured by just your trust that God's going to show up and take care of you as he always has. Now your faith begins to be measured by fidelity to God, regardless of whether he shows up in the way he used to or not.
Mm-hmm.
So now the faith gets galvanized from a trust of the outcome to a trust in the character. And you decide if you'll be faithful to him regardless of whether he shows up.
Yeah.
And I've been in that season a little bit. And praying from that season, I'm going somewhere here. Praying from that season, asking for things is a lot more weird. Because I'm aware. There was a day and time, Johnny, I feel like almost everything I prayed for, God would answer in an affirmative way in some way. And the things he didn't was very evident to me, like I didn't need that or whatever. And then you get to a place where it's like, God seems like, and again, I'm sorry, this is a very entitled way, and I don't mean to be a spoiled child of God. I just mean like, because I know I'm still breathing, and my gosh, he saved me from so many things even this past year. So I'm not being that way. I just mean like, the things that he could have done that I asked for, a lot of the time he said no.
Yeah.
It was a flat no. I'll get there.
So if your faith's based on just results, you're going to be shaken by that.
Yeah. And so, but then I do believe it pleases God to petition him as Scripture.
Yeah.
So how do you keep asking? So this is going back to your bookshelf thing. Like, there are things that taught me how to ask mm-hmm. and that I even had results from. And now I can throw those books or those ideas out and be like, well, God doesn't show up. I don't believe that. I just think God's allowed me to hear no's, and I think it's another way, and it's been hurtful.
Yeah.
And you even get angry. Like, what? All you got to do is this, you mm-hmm. know, like... but it makes like, and when I was asking this morning, it was a real like, okay, what I'm leaning into is I believe that it pleases you for me to come with gratitude and humility to ask my Father for things, and knowing that you may say no, I'm still going to do that.
Yeah.
Because you're good, and I won't like this outcome, and I can't promise you I won't be upset if you say no. I'm really asking you to say yes, but... I've now been through this enough. I'm going to trust you either way. And it's like, you can't teach that. Like, I would love to teach that. I'm talking about it now, but it's not really something I would have been able to grasp. And
yeah.
I still have a long way to grasp it until I had experienced those really deep, hurtful no's.
Right.
You know, that felt so hard. But that piece of information, that's the, that is the sort of pattern throughout Scripture. You're going to come to a place where your faith is not just measured by the outcomes, but measured by your fidelity, regardless of outcomes.
Or like the best example in the Bible that I always think about is like when Elijah, they had just rained, the fire had just rained down from heaven on the altar, and he had defeated the prophets of Baal.
Yeah.
And then he hears that the queen is after him, wants to kill him. He runs into a cave. He's hiding for his life. Where's
runs
God?
Runs across the desert.
Yeah. Where's God? Where's God? And then this fire comes, but God wasn't in the fire. The wind comes, God wasn't in the wind. Then a still small voice, he falls to his knees. So like, God was the fire 2 days earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But this time God wasn't in the fire. So that's like a great example of that. Like, it's these different methods. It's like he was showing, look, sometimes it's going to be a still small voice. That's going to be just as powerful. That's the fire.
Yeah.
I'm the fire. And so I have to remind myself that sometimes it's like, yeah, it's not always some huge thing. It's like there's that voice behind you saying, this is the way.
Interesting.
Know? Or just a peace. You know, I really feel like God leads through peace in my life most of the time.
Yeah.
I feel a lack of peace. I go, this can't be right. Sometimes you feel a lack of peace because your own anxiety. I get that.
Right.
But in general, I've learned to know the difference between like, this feels wrong because this person's not trustworthy.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a check in my soul about this person. I'm not just an antsy person that doesn't like trusting people. This is an untrustworthy person.
Yeah.
And I don't go that direction. Like I used to have that in my career a lot where I made up my mind early on in my career that when I got to where agents were starting to want to talk to me because I was building shows on my own, I was getting opportunities. And that's when agents come for you. Comedians ask me all the time, young comedians, how do I get an agent? I go, you don't want to go get an agent. You want them to come get you, because if you go get one, you're not going to get the right one.
Yeah.
Because you need them way more than they need you.
Right.
You need them to need you, and you hold hands with that person and you both make money together. That's the best, you know, symbiotic relationship. But when agents started contacting me, I had like this internal rule in my mind that if they said certain things, that it was an instant no. If they said cheesy corn, I had a very sensitive cheese meter about agencies saying like, we want to be in the Johnny W biz or whatever.
Right. Phrases that really,
if it felt very
gave you
car salesman, or they blew smoke like too much, you wanted to be confident. Like, we like what we see, but you don't want it to be so much that you're like, they say this to everybody. And, and again, some of that's my own insecurity, but part of it was like, I really felt peace around certain people that would just be like, well, look, we don't know what's going to happen, but this is what we've done before with these artists, and we like what you do. I go like, you're my guy.
Yeah.
They're honest. And if somebody lies to me and they are in business with me, it's really hard. Like, if the show doesn't work out, if we lost money, if you made a mistake, but then you own it, that's one thing. But if I find out you took from me, or you fudged the numbers, or you said one thing and did another, like, it's really hard. So that's like what I mean by like, there's just relationships in your life that you kind of feel a peace about, and there's some that you don't. I feel like God speaks to me in that way a lot.
Yeah, that's great. It goes back to, again, assembly line thinking. We really want, even the ancients, we really want God to, I mean, it goes into, you know, Moses and the rock. God told him once to strike it. The next time he told him to speak to it. And Moses, even Moses felt, well, it should work this way because it worked this way before. Same way Jesus feeding the 5,000.
Yeah.
You know, they start following. Jesus turns to them and he goes, you're following me. So, because he had fed the 5 and the 4 at that point. You're wanting me to keep feeding you.
Mm-hmm.
So what if I told you, eat my flesh and drink my blood? Oh, you all left. Like, you know what I'm saying? There's more. I'm not going to keep doing the same thing because that's not why I'm here.
Right.
Or do it in the same way. When I'm here, I'm going to do the same work. It's going to be through, you know, a variety or, you know, a diversity of different things. I think there's such a beauty to accepting that.
Well, and trusting that God has that 1,000-yard view that you can't possibly see.
Yeah.
Is really hard. Like, it's like when you zoom out on a map.
Right.
Like, I'm going, I got invited to go to Casper, Wyoming in November, and I type it in Google, and then immediately I zoom out to see, like, what is near this that I can get to? And we didn't used to have that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd roll out a map, or we'd try to figure it out. Now we can just go, boom, boom, I can hit minus 5 times, and I can see, well, God's always had that thing in your life, and he has perspective that we don't have. I remember one time you were talking about sermon illustrations. I remember one time I was in church and you were preaching about, and you were talking about me because you said that I have this new car that will like whatever it'll drive.
Yeah.
And you were kind of using the illustration of like, we fight it because we want total control, but the computer knows it's got a camera that can see way down the road. It knows to slow down. And you're trying to use this illustration of like, you know, some of y'all were blah, blah, blah. Like, Johnny's got this thing. And I could see all the young people were like, yeah. And all the old people fold their arms and go, no way would I let a car drive for me. Like, it was such a funny, like, it got the opposite reaction
right.
that you wanted, which is like,
that's what
God knows best. He's the Tesla or he's the whatever. I don't have a Tesla. But it's that thing of like, generationally, it was landing different with different people
yeah.
because of those checks in our personalities about like, I tell you what, these cars are going to kill somebody.
Right.
You know? And I don't know. It's so funny to me.
It is very funny.
Have you ever driven a like an actual that'd Tesla?
Big negative.
So I always get the cheapest. So I went on Hertz and I'm renting a whatever. And the cheapest car, I organize it by price. By the way, these travel websites, if you're looking at hotels, have you noticed that one of the ways you can organize the results is prices high to low?
Right.
Who's doing that? Who is organizing?
Show me the most expensive.
Yeah, show me the $800 a night hotel, please.
Yeah.
I just want to see. Who knows? Maybe I'll do it.
Yeah.
Three hot tubs? Let's go. Stop right. it. High to low.
Ugh.
Anyway.
Why even that?
There's probably high to low people out there that are like, no, that's what we do.
I was going to support
know.
The podcast, but no.
Yeah. I'm turning in my receipts. I might as well make my. Anyway. Yeah. So I'm organizing low to high like I do because I'm cheap. Mm. The Teslas keep coming up on Hertz now. I think they're pushing these Teslas. But I'm a Gold Circle member, or Gold Circle. I'm a President Circle member. So I can usually choose a car anyway. So I'll choose the cheapest one. And then when I get there, I'll just change it to a whatever. So I go, yeah, let's do the Tesla. But I'm probably not going to drive a Tesla. I just don't know enough about it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of like adjustments. You know, if you drive an electric car for the first time, you don't know anything about it. I got to get to my show. It's
yeah.
a weird. So immediately I get, over the last week since I've booked this thing, I've gotten like six emails. Hey, get ready for your EV. And there's all this stuff you have to read. I got to do homework.
Wow.
And I don't think I'm going to be able to opt out of this Tesla.
Wow.
Not that it's a weird thing to say you want to opt out, but
you're
gonna
love it.
I just feel uncomfortable because
yeah.
there's an iPad that controls the whole car.
Yeah.
And you got to know all that eight menus deep. So I have to do homework now because I think I'm going to be, it's weird to say stuck with a Tesla, but I feel like I'd like to just have a regular car.
There's no way around it, but just rip the Band-Aid off, Johnny. And then
and
after
just
this,
go.
Watch, you're going to be on there next week. Like, guys, we all going to get a Tesla. Like, it's gonna be, I guarantee you.
Probably.
Yeah, because you'll learn
That's okay.
it. You're techie. I mean, you'll, you know.
Do you think?
Well, no. But I think that you adjust. No, you're techie because you always get the big TV with the, by the way, you were trying to get me to get YouTube TV, and I went a different direction.
You went the direction of screaming at Comcast for an hour.
I didn't scream at
him. I said Comcast. It's Comcast. Although it is a con. It's a long con.
I spent about 3 hours on the phone with Comcast, and now they're done. I'm sorry.
You, as a company?
Guys, I
you
have
did?
Great
You brought
power.
Them to their knees.
I no longer have television service with them.
Oh.
Canceled.
Or at all?
Well, no. Then I went that day and signed up for Hulu TV.
Hold on a minute.
It's way cheaper.
I'm really upset with you. YouTube TV is the same price as Hulu TV, and I would have gotten a $45 credit on my bill.
Okay, I tried it. They won't let me do it. They can't give you the credit. I tried to do YouTube TV. It messed up. I called them. This is what I did to try to get your thing. I called them.
This is infuriating.
And I was like, guys, you're telling me you can't. It acts like I've already used this.
It's like you're trying to hurt me.
No, I'm telling you. I tried to help you. And they were like, sir, there's nothing we can do. The system thinks.
Hey, John, I work for Coke now. And if you'll try this six-pack of Coke, I'll get a huge benefit. You know what? I think I'm going to have a Pepsi.
I signed up and tried it, and it wouldn't let me do it.
You're
but I went to Hulu because I already have a Disney bundle, and it's included. So that was down another $12.99 a month.
Yeah.
And unlike the, you know, the one thing, the one channel that is not on YouTube TV, you know what it is?
I don't.
History Channel.
You can't get it, though? You can get an app with a thing.
But it's on Hulu for free.
Mm.
Well, you're paying for the Hulu, so.
Yeah.
I have Hulu. If it doesn't work, I'll go to the other. I tried, Johnny. I tried. Now, the one thing that's not good is I don't have unlimited screens. So I can only be on two TVs. You can upgrade, but I have two TVs. But what if I don't watch more than two TVs at once?
Well, you got ladies in your house that have other
devices. Well, right, because I got it on mom's upstairs now, and I got one downstairs.
Right, you got three ladies.
So if I want to go to the other two TVs, that's sort of a problem. I may have to upgrade.
You
got to,
like, start calling around. Hey, I'm getting ready to watch something. Shut it down! You got to, like, tell people. You got to say, we're going to DEFCON 3!
I thought if you just turn it off in one room, then you could... And I went to another room, and it's not that way. It's like if it's logged in elsewhere, then you're done, Smalls.
That's funny.
And now it's like, well, dang it.
But
so,
how much is it to add the other screens? It's going to be as much as
like
cable.
It's like $15. It probably
oh, no.
No, I think it'll get me back my money I saved on Disney, the Disney bundle.
Oh,
so basically, I'll be back to that if I did that.
The Disney bundle.
Yeah.
Man.
I like Hulu TV so far. Not a sponsor. They might be a sponsor. I don't know. Lots
John,
of sponsors.
You got a green background today, so
guys,
it feels very...
Coincidence?
Hulu has live sports.
I think it might be. You know what, though, Johnny?
Hmm.
I think it's time for that wonderful segment.
Oh, is
that
it?
That our listeners clamor for every week. Every week. You can hear the clamoring through the digital airwaves.
So much clamoring. It's a little segment where we go over this week in history. We call it Talk About Then. February of 1978, John, the first computer bulletin board system, or BBS, is created in Chicago, Illinois. It opened to the public the following year. It connected 253,000 callers before its shutdown. BBS systems were the forerunner to the internet. They allowed users to upload and download files, chat, and play games with one another. This is 78. So, like, it's a forerunner to the internet. I never knew this was a thing.
Interesting.
Computer bulletin board systems.
That was the year I was born.
I didn't know there was 250,000 computers then in the 70s. Did your school have a computer lab in the 80s? Well, it would have been the late 80s.
Mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had it.
I learned to type on a electric typewriter. We didn't have computer lab.
We had a typewriter at home.
Yeah.
And then Dad got Macs pretty early, or Macintoshes, you know.
Oh, wow. He went full on.
Yeah, Dad. Well, he was an educator.
Yeah.
Apple really started off as the educator.
Right.
You know,
it costs more, but you get the credit. There was like credits they would offer to schools and things.
Yeah.
February 16th, 1959, this person was sworn in as the Prime Minister of Cuba, John, Fidel Castro.
Wow.
After forcing President Fulgencio Batista into exile. This is how it was done. This is how politics is done in the rest of the world. You got to realize,
I did not know he was the Prime Minister first.
He forced the other guy into exile.
Interesting.
The U.S. initially recognized the new Cuban dictator, but withdrew support after Castro nationalized U.S. assets on the island and declared a Marxist government. So we originally were in favor of Castro. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Let's see. King Tut, February 16th, 1923, the boy king's burial chamber was unsealed. So you like this burial stuff. You like this archaeology stuff.
Love it.
King Tut. That was in the 1920s. Several weeks after discovering the tomb, the people who financed the excavation looked into the tomb. So they waited weeks. And then, this guy named Lord Carnarvon died 5 months later due to an infected mosquito bite, leading many to speculate, including Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, creator of Sherlock Holmes, that his death was caused by protections created by Tutankhamun's priests to guard the royal tomb. So this guy dies of a mosquito bite 5 months after opening the unsealed, and they blame it on a curse.
Everybody else didn't die, though.
It's the curse of the... Well, they died years and years later of old age.
They died of the curse that we
just
all
in general.
Remember.
Yeah. So. I wanted to make sure we went over this one, because this one... Well, Sonny Bono was born 1935, February 16th.
Yeah.
Sonny and Cher.
He was a senator too, right?
He was a senator, and he died in a skiing accident.
Yeah,
in Vail, Colorado. Where was he the mayor of Palm Springs, California? So,
oh, wow.
Which I want to say that Clint Eastwood was mayor of Palm Springs at some point too.
Really?
I think so. I'm not going to look it up.
I'd like to see how he cleaned up that town.
That's the thing. It's like that. The political campaign writes itself.
Yeah, we should write a
just
script.
Just blow into town like the outlaw Josie Wales. He's got that thing on, the metal shield, you know, that you can fire guns, but then he... Anyway. You remember that movie? Okay.
Josie Wales.
The outlaw Josie Wales. All right. The McDonald's brothers. One of the McDonald's brothers was born in 1909. You know, you've seen The Founder, right? They kind of had their idea kind of taken. Ray Kroc kind of was like, I'll make this great. And he kind of siphoned credit.
Well, that's that version.
Siphoning was, oh, you think that there's a,
I don't know,
there's a version where Ray Kroc is a hero? It's fine. I got nothing against it.
Food to Build America, they don't.
They gave him a pass? They softballed it?
Just say he had a brilliant. I mean, they signed a contract, I think, to give him what they gave him. So.
Right. They, if you've seen The Founder, though, they make him look like he was a shyster. And then they were just kind of like sitting on it, being like, this is cool, we got a few restaurants. And he was like, I'll take you national. But then he took a lot of credit.
Yeah.
And kind of swindled them in a way. All right, this is the one I wanted to make sure we went over. Henry Wilson, which I asked you about this because I was like, what do you know about Henry Wilson?
Yeah, I didn't remember his name.
He was the 18th U.S. Vice President under President Ulysses S. Grant. And he was born in 1812, February 16th. He was having an affair with the Confederate spy Rose O'Neill Greenhow.
Wow.
And was accused of leaking to her plans of the Civil War's first major battle, the First Battle of Bull Run.
Okay, hold on. He was Grant's vice president?
Yeah. So I don't know. This happened in 1861. He was president. He was vice president under Grant in 1873 to 75.
I was going to say, yeah, it had to be. So
he's this weird, like, rogue character.
And he ends up becoming maybe
it was
vice
only,
president.
Maybe they considered it a rumor then, but this says he was having an affair with this Confederate spy. And accused of leaking. Now, he was only accused of leaking the plans. But, I mean, if you're having an affair, you know, plans are going to leak. That's how I feel. First Battle of Bull Run. So, the Union, expecting a quick victory, was routed by Confederate forces. And so, they blamed it on him. They basically... So, there was... I guess it was like a rumor that hung over him politically, maybe. I don't know.
How did the guy get elected?
He died in office, making Thomas W. Ferry the acting vice president. So, that's why he was only vice president for 2 years.
Interesting.
And I don't know what he died of. It does not say. But that's an interesting story that we had like a Confederate spy relationship in the White House, basically. But it was years after it was alleged to have happened.
Yeah.
But still, like, that's a scandal that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Most of the scandals in Grant's administration were more financial. It was the Gilded Age. And
yeah,
none of them ever touched him directly. But
yeah,
except the, was it Guadalupe annexation? He wanted to annex another part there of Central America, kind of, and it was shot down. So, but yeah. Anyway,
I don't know, man. But that's there's some spy stuff going on between the Confederates and the Unions. I did not know that. That was you don't think of that. You think of that as like a European.
Oh no, lots of spy things. Lots of spy networks, and you got
to
think.
But like that, it went all the way to the top like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess he was not even a political candidate when that happened. He was probably I don't know what he was.
Well, I mean, several things you got to remember. I mean, like, John Wilkes Booth was famous.
Right.
They'd be like Tom Cruise, you know, shooting Obama. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was a...
Jumping down from the...
Right. And
what did he say? Temper tyrannis? What did he say? Death to tyrants?
Yeah.
But it was something?
Something like that. Okay. And he...
Hip, hip. No. That's
but like, it. I mean, you got to think of it. In fact, there's a picture they found the other day of a huge crowd. Like, I think it's the second inaugural address.
Uh-huh.
And they have identified now a little speck, and it's John Wilkes Booth listening to the address from behind the president. Like, he's sitting up to the right of him.
So foreboding, right?
Yeah. And that was a few, you know, he wasn't in office long in that second term.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that particular war, it really is families. I mean, it really is culture, and it's all happening at once. And the capital of the United States is in the South, you know, because of Hamilton's deal with Jefferson. So, like, it's a big, there's just a lot there. I mean, Richmond and Washington, the two capitals,
right,
I think are like less than 100 miles from each other.
Yeah.
So maybe less than that. There's no way to know. But like, it's just, there's a lot of intermingling there. So yes, they would call them spies.
I guess it just makes me wonder if I can really trust you.
I wouldn't.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, we talked about feeling peace versus not.
Right.
I have, to this point, felt some peace.
But
now that I read this, I'm like, is John playing the long game?
Right.
What's he blabbing to Laura?
What if this is one of the things that God's going to say no to me about, let my life fall apart?
What's my Battle of Bull Run that you're leaking out there?
Well, Johnny,
I don't know. I don't have a battle.
I don't have a...
There's no battles.
No. You're doing pretty well.
Oh, Thanks. That's so nice. Yeah, that's so sweet of you to say.
You know what, listener? We hope that you felt like you've done pretty well today, being a part of this lovely, informative, humorous, thoughtful podcast. We hope it was all of those things for you. And if you liked it, you can even get more.
Even more. So much more at talkaboutthatpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
We're on all the platforms.
Yeah. And you can also follow Johnny. Johnny's a great follow. He posts a lot of funny things. JONNIEW.com.
Yeah.
Well, or you can go to his Linktree.
Link to my Linktree. Yeah. Search those. John's got a bunch of books on Amazon. Go find out about that. He's got some new books that are coming out. He's got a couple he's writing this year that we're excited about.
Yeah.
And so check out John Driver. Not John C. Driver, right?
I own that, but it's not linked up yet. Yeah, just johndriver.com.
And just it's not the one that's...
No.
Is he...
Mennonite.
Mennonite.
Yeah.
Almost said Armenian. That's not...
That's... Means...
That's different.
He is... What is his... Yeah, Mennonite, I'm not sure.
Mennonites are like
if
Amish.
They lie more on the Armenian side or the Calvin side.
That's true. That is an interesting thought. I know. I always thought Mennonites were like Amish, but like a little bit more... Like the Amish would go, those wild Mennonites.
I wonder if the women ever started a movement to call themselves the Women Mennonites.
Yeah.
I bet that's a big... I bet like female Mennonites listening are like, oh, never heard that one before.
Yeah, it's true. It's like a really hack Mennonite joke. It's this thing on. And then they go, what is this thing? Yeah, because they're Mennonites. Right. They don't use microphones.
But we use a microphone, and we're going to keep using it, Johnny, every week, and we look forward to doing it again next week on
Talk About That.
Finding uplifting news in today's headlines is often like searching for a needle in a haystack. At the Story Behind podcast, we believe in the power of finding heartwarming tales and are happy to share empowering stories with you every week. Hear about how Steve Harvey surprised a dying man on Family Feud with $25,000. Get inspired by the note a waitress received from a patron dining alone. And even hear about how one VIP passenger made a hardworking pilot get emotional before his flight. To start listening to the Story Behind podcast, visit lifeaudio.com or search Story Behind on your favorite podcast platform.